Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, October 1st, and the government is shut down as of midnight last night. And so the congressional GOP leadership is set to hold a press conference on the reckless Democrat government shutdown today at 10 a.m. That will feature Speaker Johnson, Leader Thune, among others in the House and Senate GOP leadership. And the Democrats are really making no qualms about the fact that they are pushing for health care for illegals. And that's a big reason why this shutdown is happening. So here is Maxine Waters, who, of course, you know, is one of the brilliant spokespeople for the left on the government shutdown. This is Cut 6.
But aren't Democrats demanding health care for illegal aliens?
Democrats are demanding health care for everybody.
Yeah, well, apparently, according to them, healthcare is a right. But for more on this and where we go from here, let's welcome in Congressman Jimmy Patronis from the great state, my home state of Florida. So good morning, Congressman. And, you know, what's going on in Washington?
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Jenna. Great to be with you. Look, Washington right now, it's an embarrassment. You have 9 different times in the previous administration where Republicans worked with Chuck Schumer to deal with this exact same scenario. And now, you know, you've got the Democrats who are just, they're trying, I guess, to find a foothold, some way to find, you know, some, you know, semblance of a party. So they feel like this is their solution. And, you know, their rally cry is to try to provide illegal immigrants, you know, benefits that even some normal American citizens just don't have access to. It's horrible. It's $1 trillion in new spending. And, you know, all we did is pass a 24-page clean CR, literally just changing the dates on the document, saying instead of the cash running out on the fiscal year, the cash is now running out on November 21st. And the Democrats can't even agree with that on it.
And this seems to not be that strategic for them. I mean, why not just agree to that clean CR? It's completely nonpartisan. I mean, the Speaker Johnson was all over the airwaves, including CNN, talking about that, which, you know, in my opinion, I mean, Republicans could have even pushed for more, but said, you know, hey, we'll pass a completely clean CR. We'll give more time to negotiate and figure out some of these things. Why would the Democrats think that that's not a good idea and actually have some of these programs that, and entitlements that they themselves want, frankly, over Republicans, to be unfunded while they push for ridiculous nonsense that they know, hopefully, Republicans won't give in to?
Well, I think a little bit of this is also a power struggle within. There's deep fractures in the Democratic Party right now. You got Mondami, who is arguably, you know, emerging as the new leader of the party. Chuck Schumer from the same state's probably having a lot of difficulty dealing with that, as he's not gotten on board that particular train yet. So, I mean, you've got some internal politics over there, and it's spilling over to the national funding of our government. So, you know, servicemen, essential services, there's so many things that are not operational right now because of their egos and their inability to want to work across the aisle for the betterment. I mean, literally, they're putting illegal immigrants over our military servicemen. That's how simple of a challenge we're facing right now.
Wow. And in that just one point, I mean, that should be the message heading into the midterms of saying you really want, you know, these guys in control of the House or the Senate when they're going to prioritize people who aren't American citizens, who've broken the law to get here, over our U.S. military. When you have, you know, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth give this amazing speech yesterday about standards returning to the military, saying, you know, we need to have military preparedness. We need to actually have respect in the military. I mean, he's bringing all of this back, and you contrast that to what the left is pushing for. I mean, I can't even understand why they think this would win, but where do you anticipate then that the conversation goes from here? Because it seems like, Congressman, that, you know, this is arguing and attempting to negotiate with people that just don't even live in the same reality that most Americans do.
You're spot on. And so, you know, this is why, I mean, I even told, I was talking to a local television station yesterday. I told him, I said, look, I said, what do you want to do? I said, call Senator Schumer's office. You don't have to be a jerk, but you can call Senator Schumer's office and ask him to work with us on the continuing resolution. Because Northwest Florida, we've got more military and veterans in concentration per capita than anywhere else in the country. So there's a lot of folks that are, that they don't like the uncertainty. I don't like the uncertainty, you know, and to me, every job is essential when it comes to paying your bills and you're doing a job for the public. So the fact that their priorities are so out of sync, and there's other things that they want to try to get included regarding Obamacare subsidies from the COVID era. But you know what? Those don't go out at the end of the year. This is going to be the first time that we're going to have a crossroads. We're going to have the same episode happen all over again on November 21st. But you got to have some time to find out what is truly needed or not. And I think they're trying to just leverage this. And I just truly think they're being very selfish.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the right word for them. I can think of a few other ones, too. I'm speaking to Congressman Jimmy Patronis from the great state of Florida. And you know, there was a clip from OMB Director Russ Vought yesterday on Fox Business when he was saying that the federal bureaucrats that could be fired while under a shutdown could be upwards of 300,000, and said that we'll be looking for the opportunity to do just that, and said, let it be said, there are all manners of authorities that will be able to keep this administration's policy agenda moving forward. That includes reducing the size and scope of the federal government. How do you anticipate that the Trump administration, but then also Congress, you know, under the leadership of Speaker Johnson and Leader Thune, are going to try to, while you're negotiating, certainly take advantage perhaps of this situation? Because, you know, I think every conservative at least wants to reduce the size of government. I mean, I'm not losing any sleep over some of the services that really don't need to be funded.
Sure. Look, there's every day I learn, since, I mean, I've been on the job since April, but every day I learn about a new pot of money that exists for some type of service or purpose that is duplicative of some other state, local, or other federal program. So, you know, yeah, do I scratch my head and wonder why we're in this type of deficit? But when you have everybody wants their own solution for the same type of problem, they just want to be able to handle it under their own policy and way. So you get members of Congress who feel like, oh, well, this agency needs it. But you also have a lot of gremlins that have been put in the machinery of the swamp that, you know, when the Democrats were in power, let's throw these different pots of money here in these different areas with executive discretion to push it out, so we don't have to go back to Congress where there's a checks and balance environment. So it's sad, but, you know, to your point a second ago, Trump is going to, this guy doesn't sleep. He is going to exploit every single second as a productive opportunity to either shrink government, make it more efficient, more responsive. And it's no different than your Pete Hegseth point earlier. Pete, you know, I thought it was enlightening. I love the fact he told these guys, you know what, you're going to shave every day. You know, I wear my guys out in my office about shaving every day. So you only got one chance to make a good first impression. And you don't work for yourself. You work for me, or you work for the military. And I appreciate that we're having a new day in Washington, D.C., and there's significant changes in management.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that significant change we're going to see, and hopefully that does include reducing the size and scope of government. I mean, previously you were Florida's CFO, and Florida is one of the few states that actually is running its budget well. And I can only imagine getting to Congress now and seeing the difference of just how terrible the federal government has been run under Democrats comparatively with our great state of Florida. So, so apart from this kind of, you know, ridiculous disaster of the government shutdown that's I think is being well titled the Schumer shutdown, what are some of your long-term priorities in office, not only for Florida, but especially with, you know, kind of your expertise that you bring to this office?
Well, we've got several different bills that we're piling on and contributing with that are just focused on disaster recovery, insurance prices. You know, I think one of the best forces for good is home ownership. And when somebody has the ability to actually own their first home, which right now is almost impossible, but when they own a home, they take care of it, they get a part of their community, they want to create a family, and then on top of that, then they start wanting to show up to work. All these good things come from somebody having a home, but when insurance is high as it is, when interest rates are high as they are, when the cost of doing business per square foot in construction is high as it is, a young couple can't, you know, have that dream a reality. They have to wait till they're in their 30s or maybe early 40s to actually buy their first home. And that's not the America I grew up in. You know, so these are where I'm starting to get focused on the crux is how we chip away and make sure we get back to the America where somebody, once they get married in their 20s, they have the ability, hopefully there soon after, to buy a home and start a family.
Yeah, and it seems like the American dream should not just be reserved for, you know, the elites or for people who have, you know, multiple incomes together. I mean, this should be something that that we all can genuinely pursue. And so Congressman Jimmy Patronis, you can follow him on X at Jimmy Patronis. What's been your impression overall in just in the few months that you've been in Congress? Because a lot of us are also really frustrated that that some of these executive orders aren't being codified quickly by Congress. I mean, a lot of this, of course, is because of the issues going on in the Senate. But overall, you know, have you been surprised maybe at how bad D.C. actually is when getting there?
So, yes, you know, I get that question a lot, and I think it kind of disarms people. And I point out the people are actually really nice. There's an enormous amount of good in Washington. There's an enormous amount of folks that laid down their lives from where they were and professionally, and they love their country and they want to make a difference. So you do have with every new cycle, you get people that are energized to want to fight to correct this country. This class that I'm a part of, a bunch of really good guys and gals. And, you know, I get inspired, I get excited. We hold each other accountable as we try to move forward. But yeah, but then you've got these curmudgeons, or you got some that are there that are just go along to get along, and that they're not really shaking things up. So, but it's the rule of numbers. It's just like one big homeowners association or one big church congregation. You've got the same type of personalities and the same type of routines at that level as you do in Washington. So, you know, but I am inspired how hard the president works. And if this guy is willing to work as hard as he is, by gosh, we all have the same obligations. But, you know, we got this guy named Mike Johnson, who's our speaker. And I tell you, talking about a man who wears his faith unapologetically on his sleeve. He is a workaholic. He's got the patience of Job. He tends to wear these people out with his patience and lets their absurdity of what they are arguing for become their own downfall when it comes to negotiating. So, I mean, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't move as fast as I want it to, But you know what? There's an awful lot of good, and we're very fortunate. Only by act of God, we've got President Trump in the White House.
Yeah, so well said. And that's a really encouraging perspective. And I'm grateful that we have you on Capitol Hill as well. Congressman Jimmy Patronis, I really appreciate you dropping by this morning. And we'll look forward to that press conference at 10 a.m. today, seeing where Speaker Johnson and Leader Thune are headed with this government shutdown. But, you know, it's a great reminder that we need to continue to pray for all of our elected officials in Washington. Yes, even the Democrats. We need to pray for all of them. That's what the Bible admonishes. And continue to pray as well for Jimmy Patronis. Again, you can follow him at Jimmy Patronis on X. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now, multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, in the midst of the government shutdown, the Trump administration and specifically the Department of War is making a lot of headlines because Secretary of War Pete Hegseth called in a bunch of military generals, had this giant meeting in Quantico, Virginia yesterday, and really just called the military back to standards. Called them back to being reasonable, acknowledging reality, and said that DEI and woke nonsense is not going to be tolerated anymore. And this is absolutely brilliant. This is everything that the U.S. military should have in terms of standards. But I want you to listen to just this one clip. If you haven't listened to the entire speech, go back and listen to it. I was just applauding, thinking this is leadership finally. But just listen to this one clip from Secretary Hegseth. This is cut 8.
This administration has done a great deal from day one to remove the social justice, politically correct, and toxic ideological garbage that had infected our department, to rip out the politics. No more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses. No more climate change worship. No more division, distraction, or gender delusions. No more debris. As I've said before, and will say again, we are done with that. I've made it my mission to uproot the obvious distractions that made us less capable and less lethal. That said, the War Department requires the next step. Underneath the woke garbage is a deeper problem, and a more important problem that we are fixing and fixing fast. Common sense is back at the White House, so making the necessary changes is actually pretty straightforward. President Trump expects it. And the litmus test for these changes is pretty simple. Would I want my eldest son, who is 15 years old, eventually joining the types of formations that we are currently wielding? If in any way the answer to that is no, or even yes, but, then we're doing something wrong. Because my son is no more important than any other American citizen who dons the cloth of our nation. He is no more important than your son, all precious souls made in the image and likeness of God. Every parent deserves to know that their son or their daughter that joins our ranks is entering exactly the kind of unit that the Secretary of War would want his son to join.
Amen. Well, let's welcome in Chris Ekstrom, who is a board member of U.S. Term Limits. And Chris, again, I just found myself applauding to all of this because it seems like maybe, just maybe, our executive is returning to living in reality instead of this DEI woke LGBTQ plus rainbow nonsense alternate reality. And this is exactly as it should be.
Good morning, Jenna. Amen, indeed. I watched that, and the first thought that came to my mind when Secretary Hegseth addressed all these generals was, thank God. Thank God for Secretary Hegseth. Thank God for President Trump. Because I truly feel, and there's many, many people that I've spoken to who, not many of them, I guess maybe one or two generals, but these people who've been in the military, you know, most of their lives, felt that we were slowly going past the point of no return. And I just had such a sense of relief for the country. I just think it's one of the great things that is going on, you know, in this administration. I think it's going to be remembered as a turning point, right, for our country. So thank God and amen to everything that Secretary Hegseth said yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen that there has been a decline in military recruitment and retention. And Hegseth framed the military as being in an identity crisis. And I think there's a role, there's a lot of real truth to that because, as he said in the clip that we just played, you know, his own son, I mean, who would want their son or daughter to go off into the military and have to put up with all of this ridiculous woke nonsense while, by the way, their life is on the line serving their country?
I just don't think anybody wanted that. And I really believe there was a widespread understanding, even by people that don't pay very close attention, that we were really playing with fire on the social experimentation gone crazy in the military. I mean, having men pretending to be women dressed up as admirals or whatever, the one case was of the, I can't remember which position it was, but as a doctor.
The nuclear scientist.
That was surreal, and you know, for the non-weirdos among us, it was an insult to the uniform. I did not serve. I came pretty close to becoming a Marine, or if I'd made it through Marine officer training, I came very close to going in. But for those people that served, that uniform has real tangible meaning, and just seeing it disgraced by some of the weirdos and nut jobs that we had welcomed in and actually sought out was just so totally unacceptable for America. So again, I'm just profoundly grateful.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chris Ekstrom, you know, you're absolutely right that it undermines the dignity of the U.S. military. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in an era where we were still, you know, putting out, Hollywood was still putting out, you know, some of these really great movies that, you know, like Saving Private Ryan and, you know, some of these that gave you like this deep, profound respect for the military, for the difficulty of what they do every day. And, you know, really a lot of patriotism. And, you know, yet some critics, of course, on the left who are still living in some kind of alternate reality argue and the headlines this morning are, you know, are screeching that speeches like Hegseth's are going to politicize the military further. And I'm thinking, how can you politicize it more than having, you know, dudes in dresses and non-reality and undermining the very purpose for which the military serves?
Well, it's cultural Marxism, and that's the big picture. The big picture is the undermining of all of our institutions. And I remember thinking, well, we'll always have the military for America, and for even if they were not as much of an unapologetic right-wing conservative as I am, they were never going to be weirdos or people that didn't love America at some level. But we had gotten to a place, believe it or not, where they found a way to do that by just completely undermining all standards. And I think that's why Secretary Hegseth called together all the generals and sat them in there together in what was apparently unprecedented, and why it was such a great idea to do it. Because he wanted them all to sit there and look at each other and realize what they had been a part of, and they all know, and how abnormal and weird it really was. And frankly, I didn't mind any expletives that he used. I've been using expletives about what's been going on in the military quite some time. And he just said, listen, we're sick of this crap, and we're not going to have it anymore. And that's it. And they had to sit there and realize that. And he also said, if you're not elated by this development, then do the honorable thing and retire. And that's exactly right. So I hope we're going to see a cull of some of the worst of these people, and they know who they are. I'm told the Air Force reliably at the top, not the airmen and not the pilots, who are highly trained, very brave people, but the leadership of the Air Force in particular has been crazy, frankly, and trying to top all the other services in bringing some of these terrible ideas to the fore. So I just think it's great, and I think that President Trump speaking afterwards showed that he totally supports the Secretary of War, and we are going to see some real good changes in the next 3 years for America.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could not agree more. And I think it was fantastic that all of these generals who, quite frankly, have been a little bit snobby, at least to the left of, when you're talking about somebody like a General Mark Milley, who thinks that, he's above President Trump, at least in his first term, right. And you had all of these this kind of enmeshed a military deep state, for lack of a better term, that thought, they know better than the sitting commander in chief in terms of, some of these policies. And you're seeing that there is a return to reality. And for them to have to sit there and basically be confronted with their own ideology was really fantastic. And just as we're speaking, the press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, posted on X, this is how it should be and everyone knows it. And she quote posted a section of this speech that's on Rapid Response 47, where Pete Hegseth said, if women can make it, excellent. If not, it is what it is. It will also mean that weak men won't qualify, because we're not playing games. This is combat. This is life or death. And this is so great because, as a woman myself, and I know what a woman is, this is not about equality. This is about standards. This is about merit. And not everybody can make it in the military. And that's okay. We need to have these kinds of standards. And I love that they changed the name from Department of Defense, which, some of the leftist media is still calling it that, by the way, to Department of War, as a display of strength and to say, we're prepared to go on opposition. All of this is a really good thing. So in just about the last minute we have, Chris Ekstrom, closing thoughts on, maybe what's next. I think Pete Hegseth, Secretary Hegseth, is doing a great job.
Well, I want to just throw in something. Back in the early 90s, I helped a journalist write a book about what was happening with the military. This all started, which is why they're going back to 1990 standards, as Secretary Hegseth noted, around that time. And she wrote a book. Her name is Stephanie Gutman. And I urge anyone who is interested in this to go back and read her book. It's probably available, I think, as a PDF. And she talked about all these developments. I think the title of the book is A Kinder, Gentler Military, Stephanie Gutman. And she was pilloried. She was attacked by all the top feminists, I mean, absolutely. She was kind of like one of the first people that got canceled. And she found plenty of women in the military who said women do not belong in combat. It is not the proper place or the right fit for a variety of reasons. Some of them are physical, but there's all sorts of reasons. And I think that was made clear yesterday. General Milley is a poster boy for everything that went wrong. And I think you nailed it when you said, and I never thought of it this way, but he put himself on a pedestal above the president. He was more comfortable calling the Chinese generals to make sure that they were you know, on the same page rather than our own president. This guy, if they can call him back for a court-martial, I think that would be a real good place to start with this whole reordering and reorganization. So
yes.
General Milley is just an absolute national disgrace, and he ought to they ought to make a point of it.
Well said. And, you know, we're seeing some accountability with the Trump administration and the current DOJ. So let's hope for more, because, you know, accountability, it's not to say that, you know, you just go after your political opponents. It's not lawfare, but actually holding people accountable for the actions and that they took. So, you know, if that's a possibility, I agree with you, Chris Ekstrom. I'm all for it. Board member of U.S. Term Limits. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as those of us who live in reality, conservatives generally, and especially Christians, as we are hailing a lot of these advancements from the Department of War, from the Trump administration, they're pushing back against the ridiculous leftist ideology, we are still being confronted with a culture that overall has really insidiously bought into this whole idea of the LGBTQ leftist trans mafia. And a lot of the left is suggesting, especially in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination, that having an ideology grounded in a biblical worldview, in truth and in reality, is hate. And they're saying this, and particularly against Charlie Kirk and everything that he stood for, which is the truth of the gospel of Christ. They're saying this not to be bombastic in most cases or just to generate headlines, but because they actually believe it. And there's a progressive leftist author and journalist, activist, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who gained a widespread readership during his time as a national correspondent at The Atlantic. He was on a podcast and actually said this very bluntly. And I think this, unfortunately, represents a lot of what the left is thinking when they are out here celebrating violence, celebrating murder, because they truly believe this. And this is horrific. It's a terrible ideology, but something here needs to be said about this. So listen to Coates as he calls Kirk a hate monger on this podcast. This is Cut 5.
I don't take any joy in saying this, but we sometimes soothe ourselves by pointing out that love, acceptance, warmth, that these are powerful forces. I believe they are. I also believe hate is a powerful force. I believe it's a powerful, powerful, unifying force. And I think Charlie Kirk was a hate monger. You know, I really need to say this over and over again. I have a politic that rejects violence, that rejects political violence. I take no joy in the killing of anyone, no matter what they said. But if you ask me what the truth of his life was, you know, the truth of his public life, I would have to tell you it's hate. I would tell you I'd have to tell you it is the usage of hate and the harnessing of hate towards political ends.
Wow. Obviously not true, but that's literally what the left is suggesting. And even some Christians are suggesting, TGC council member, and this is coming from the dissenter, suggested that Charlie Kirk was murdered because he wasn't sensitive enough. And he was talking about how Charlie Kirk's assassination, that he thinks the lesson in all of this is quote unquote gospel sensitivity. Now, I disagree with that, but I think that there is a moment here where we can ask ourselves, how do we win over the lost and dying culture when so many of these that are caught up in the LGBTQ lie, truly most of these people are victims of a movement. They've bought into this false ideology and they become so angry when they're confronted with the reality that that's not the solution to their problems. And so I think our good friend Eric Metaxas had a really wonderful way of pointing out that sometimes Christians can use our faith as a cudgel, and instead of not being, you know, this cultural sensitivity nonsense, or not, you know, acknowledging or for one second suggesting, you know, that we're hate-filled bigots, you know, whatever that the left is accusing us of, but not even giving the left any kind of foothold at all in any kind of genuine argument that in the rise of the MAGA movement, quite frankly, when you have all of these, you know, kind of bombastic discussion points, especially from Trump's Twitter feed, that Christians are called to a higher standard. This is what Eric Metaxas said in part on the PragerU podcast. And I think it was so perfectly said. This is cut four.
People use their Christian faith as a cudgel. Even when I've heard people say Christ is king, I thought there's something about that that bothers me. What is it that bothers? There's something about the spirit of that. It's kind of like what they're really saying is F you. Mm. They're using, what's more demonic than using these beautiful words to be like, you know, like it's a triumphant whatever. When I say Jesus is Lord, Jesus is king, there's something moving and beautiful and humble about that. Mm. But there are people that it's a tribal kind of identity. And it's sort of like, we're right. And so there's something very prideful about that, which is antithetical to faith in the God of the Bible, right? So in other words, we have this confidence and this hope, but it's not triumphalist. It's not sneering at those with whom we disagree. It's understanding that apart from the grace of God, I would be in that camp believing those dumb things. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated. There's some fundamental things about the Christian faith they don't get. For example, the scripture says that we Christians are grafted in to the tree of faith, grafted in to Israel. Jesus, Mary, talked about Israel. So does it mean there are people who are Jewish who have veered off of that, or people who don't? Of course there are. There are secular, evil people in every tribe and every, okay. But the point is that God's idea of Israel, this sacred idea of Israel, he says to Christians, and Christians are obliged to believe that we are grafted in to this tree of faith. Jesus was a rabbi. He was living out ultimately the fulfillment of the Jewish faith. That's what Christians are obliged to believe. And so the idea that somehow, like, you know, he started a new religion, Christianity, that's just wrong. Like, that's just silly. It's wrong. But there are people that, again, they have this tribal identity, like, I'm a Christian and these are the Jews. It's like you're not understanding what it is to be a Christian. To be a Christian is to love the people of God.
And this is just so beautifully said, and I encourage you to watch that full podcast at PragerU. But Eric Metaxas, my good friend, radio host and prolific author, joins me now. And Eric, you have such an amazing way of communicating the grace and the love of God when more often, you know, my natural bent is to speak truth, and I have to remember that love is part of that. And I think that there is a moment here that we can truly understand what the left, not, you know, these people that are going off on the LGBTQ nonsense and are at the height of this, not what they're saying about, you know, hate-filled bigotry trying to silence and cancel us, but what the victims of this whole movement are crying out for is for truth, and to say and communicate our Christian faith in a way that reaches the lost and the broken.
Oh, well, thank you, Jenna. You know, what's interesting to me, and this is why
unless you're really following the living Lord, unless the Holy Spirit is guiding you, you can get this wrong in either direction. And Satan is thrilled for you to get it wrong that way or the opposite way. He doesn't care how you get it wrong. So if you get it wrong by being so quote-unquote winsome that you don't even speak truth, that you're serving the devil. But if you say it in a nasty way, or in a chest-beating triumphalist way, you can also be serving the devil. So first of all, it has to be said that, you know, these liberal people, they are offensive. Ta-Nehisi Coates or whatever his preposterous virtue signaling, you know, exotic name is, these people, they are virtue signalers and they are nasty. And I want to say, first of all, to somebody like that, I'm not going to be winsome to somebody like that. He's nasty. He's foolish. He's deceptive. What he said about Charlie Kirk is despicable. He should apologize. When you say Charlie Kirk is a hate monger, you are a hate monger. You are despicable. And these people, what is interesting, too, is they speak out of ignorance. And I say, listen, if you don't understand a situation, if you don't know the details, feel free to shut up. Feel free to say nothing instead of speaking out of your ignorance. And that's just what he did. When you call Charlie Kirk a hate monger, you're a fool. You are a fool, because anything you, if you want to disagree with Charlie Kirk, go, you can disagree, but to call him a hate monger is unbelievably foolish, ignorant, and it is itself hate mongering. So think of the irony. That's what the left always does. They just use terms. They call you names. You and I have been called names. And I think, listen, if you have a genuine disagreement or something like that, but you're not dealing with hate mongers. You know who a hate monger is? Nick Fuentes is a hate monger. There are real hate mongers out there, okay? It's not like they don't exist, but they're pretty rare. And people like Charlie Kirk and Eric Metaxas and Jenna Ellis will be the first ones to say, don't have anything to do with Nick Fuentes. Like, he's an actual racist and an actual hate monger. But when somebody on the left calls Charlie Kirk a hate monger, I think, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself doing that anytime. But to do it right after he's been murdered is so despicable. And we have to denounce it forcefully, forcefully. It's despicable, and that person should apologize. So that's number one. But what you said when you were playing the clip of when I was talking to Marissa Streitz on the PragerU thing, we have seen what we call Christianity or conservative values put forth sometimes in a way that is not with the love of God. And we do have to say that's not excusable. So when people, I have said in the past, they have this kind of chest-beating attitude about Christ is king. And what they really seem to be saying is, like, if you don't agree with me, if you're not part of my tribe, you know, I'm kind of like dunking on you, you know, like you're not, in other words, that has an attitude about it that is triumphalist and is tribalist, and that's not of the spirit of Jesus. And so it really is, the only way to walk that tightrope is to look to God, and to do our best to look to God and to be loving even when we're speaking with our enemies. But I think sometimes, you know, we have to be bold and we have to be strong. And so it's not so easy. And I know you and I both have seen stuff on the right where we go, you know what? That doesn't represent me. That doesn't represent Jesus. Even if the person is saying words that I agree with, the way they say it is nasty. And I think, you know, that is the challenge. So we have to keep our eyes on Jesus, but that means, you know, on the one hand, firmly rejecting lies and deception, and on the other hand, doing it in a way that it doesn't push people away unnecessarily.
Yeah, so well said, Eric. And I think you're absolutely right to draw a contrast between people on the left, like this Coates guy, who are purposefully nasty. They are purposefully trying to tear down Christians, to call us all sorts of names, to try to silence and cancel us, versus the people who we all know, who are, you know, unfortunately part of this culture that, you know, they've bought into the lies. I mean, these are people who are maybe the well-meaning parents who are saying, you know, I have a kid who's coming home from, you know, this woke school now with a different gender, saying they're a different gender. What do I do about it? And I really want to love my child, but they're caught up in all of this nonsense. They're believing the so-called experts. Or these are the people who, you know, are in our neighborhoods who they're not yet Christians. And so we can't expect them to understand and have discernment. And they're being preyed upon by the culture. And instead using the Lord's name in vain, frankly, like this cudgel, that's not what we're called to do. We can, I think, separate out and identify those people as really the harvest. When the Lord says, you know, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few, we need to look at them as part of the lost and dying culture. And I think have a different attitude maybe than what the left accuses us of.
Well, I agree. And, you know, Jenna, I was just going to say my radio show and my podcast is going away. I don't want to get into that right now. But if people want to reach me, they should go to ericmetaxas.com because we're doing some shifting and stuff. The reason I say that is because I believe, you know, now that I'm in my 60s, I can say those of us who've been seasoned in the faith, you can look to us to try to get it right. And so I always say to people, whom you follow is a big deal. When I first came to faith, I was following Chuck Colson. I go, there's somebody who's living out his faith in a way that is, it seems right. And I think we have to understand, who am I following? Who are the people who, you know, in other words, I say not just to follow me personally, but on my show, I have people on who evince these values, because I think it is important. I think there's a lot of deception out there. And so on the one hand, we have to know how to stand against the lies in the culture. And listen, the lies are despicable. You know, people on the left are harming our kids. They're harming the nation. That's a fact. And if you don't have passion about pushing back against that, I don't know what world you live in. You don't need to be a Christian to know that there are loud, deceiving, crazy voices out there. We have to fight. We've got to fight against it. We've got to fight politically. We've got to fight culturally. We've got to stop watching TV shows or promoting things with our money like Disney that are harming our kids. And we've got to do that, and we've got to be serious about that. But at the same time, we want to be following people who propose an alternative that's a good alternative and a healthy alternative. And again, I've always believed if you follow the right people, and I put myself out there as one of those people, not because I'm any better than anybody, but because I really care about getting it right, and because I myself try to follow the people. It's like a community to say, you know, this is my tribe, people that they stand for truth, but they want to speak the truth in love. That, unfortunately, is a little bit rare. And so whoever you follow online as a pastor or on Instagram or whatever, you know, you want to follow those voices. There are many of them out there. The reason I put myself out there is because, as I say, I'm getting on in years where I've seen a lot, and I care about young people. I care about them having the right role models. And because on the programs that I do, I invite people on whom we can follow and say, you know, this person, that person, these are good people. Because there are deceptive voices out there. So I'll just say it again. People can follow me on my website. It's ericmetaxas.com, because we're doing a couple of new shows and things, and I want people to be able to reach me. So it's just my name, ericmetaxas.com. But this is an important conversation, and we're living in historic times, Jenna. It's exciting. God is doing great things. We're seeing revival, and I think that's why the left is so nasty, because they don't know what to say. They're losing. They know they're losing. They know that people have seen through the lunacy. It's like nice people in America always give you the time of day. They kind of listen away. But then at some point they say, you know what? You're nuts. You've got drag queen story hours with little kids. You're promoting confused sexuality to children. You're not. I don't want anything to do with you. You're an enemy to my children, to my family, to my neighborhood. And, mm-hmm. and we've got to speak out against it, because it has become so nasty. Even the person they chose for the Super Bowl halftime show, we've got to reject that. And if you don't reject it, then you're part of the problem. And I've said that many times.
Absolutely.
You've got to be serious.
Well, Eric, I wish we had more time, and thank you so much. I'll look forward to seeing what's next for you. But, you know, part of the reason I have you on is because you've been a mentor and a standard for me to follow for, you know, in the decade plus that we've known each other, because you do this so well, speaking truth, never backing down from that, but also in love, and you're a great role model for that. So thank you so much for that. I love you. I cherish you. And we'll be talking more to Eric Metaxas. Already out of time. You can reach me and my team at Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.